by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going on this week. We've got a fight over the budget, including the funding for the wall of $5 billion. And right now, it's in limbo. We'll give a final report at the end of this hour about what the status is of this fight over the budget and the wall between Trump and Schumer and them. But right now, we're going to start off with the interview by Tucker Carlson of Colonel McGregor. McGregor is one of the most stand-up military men that you're going to hear. And he testifies about our pullout, that Trump has made a decision to pull out of Syria. And there's a big machine up there, a big military-industrial complex, and they just want to continue these wars and the funding of these wars and the money-making that results from the funding of all this war material. But listen to Tucker and Colonel McGregor, who's a fine stand-up man. Here we go.
And so after a while, you start to suspect that Trump's real crime isn't being a puppet of the Saudis or Putin. It's refusing to be a puppet of permanent Washington. That's what they really hate. Douglas McGregor has been around all this for a very long time. He's a retired U.S. Army colonel. He's the author of the book Margin of Victory, and he joins us tonight. So, Colonel, I consider you a trustworthy source of information on these questions. Do you think it's an impeachable offense to withdraw our troops from Syria?
Well, of course not. That's ridiculous nonsense. Look, you've just done a great job of explaining why President Trump's decision was really a brilliant decision. First of all, President Trump, for the first time, made a decision to withdraw forces without consulting his inner circle. By the way, this is the same inner circle that has sabotaged every policy action that President Trump has tried to initiate, has obstructed the American First agenda from day one. So, thank goodness he's not talking to them. Secondly, he's struck a blow for the American people against the warfare state. What you just showed on television is what we like to refer to as the Washington Uniparty. These are the people on your famous ship that's sinking right now. These are the individuals, lobbyists, legislators, retired senior officers, media. These are the individuals that want to cultivate conflict and keep forces mired everywhere, but as you say, leave our southern border, our borders, our territorial waters effectively open. So Donald Trump has done a great service because he's brought all of this out into the open. And he needs to remember something. When Richard Nixon did something similar and ended the Vietnam War and pulled our troops out under the best circumstances that he could get, he was not only reelected, when he went to his inauguration, he had a 68% approval rating. That's where Donald Trump is headed with the American people. Forget the people in Washington and the people that you just showed on the television.
Two quick questions. I noticed in all the coverage in the last 2 days, no one has made an explicit case for what the point of staying in Syria would be. I mean, they make these sort of broad claims, we can't help Putin or the Iranians. But no one ever gets up and says, okay, we're going to be there for 6 years, we're going to achieve these three things. Is there a case for it?
No, absolutely not. In fact, the good news is that the Russians, the Iranians, the Syrian government will do a very fine job of absolutely annihilating what remains of ISIS. The other point is that we were in a position in northern Syria where we were extremely vulnerable. Remember, we always had light troops there. They were always under threat of attack. We were waiting for another Beirut bombing to occur between the Turks, the Iranians, the Kurds, and so forth. And by the way, the Israelis, if they want to go in there and attack anything that they think is a is a danger to their security, they can do so. They're free to do so. We're out of the way. Yeah.
Amen. And last question, and I don't want to be too cynical, and I'm not a conspiracy nut. I take things at face value. But would it shock you if in the next couple of weeks or months Assad used chemical weapons against his people once more, and lo and behold, we can't leave Syria? Would that surprise you?
Well, look, let's hope that President Trump has learned from previous experience, and we don't have to go down that road again. The good news is that he's got some momentum now. He can make profound change. He can get rid of all of these people in the White House and the Department of Defense who are against him and against his policies. He needs to seize this opportunity and do precisely that.
Very smart. Colonel McGregor, thank you very much for coming on tonight. It's great to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Well, Tucker Carlson was saying Trump's sin is not listening to the top brass in the Pentagon that represents all the munition manufacturers and so forth. So Trump is out there on his own, and they don't like it. And pulling out of Syria, they don't want that. And they're to a man in the Pentagon and some of the State Department. They just are totally, totally against this. And this is just really, really mind-boggling at times when you're talking about it. But coming up next is going to be an interview by Greg Jarrett. And he talks about Hillary and Schumer and all of them, and how they testified in the past that, boy, we need a barrier and all this stuff. And then now the Democrats are trying to obstruct giving the money for Trump to build the wall. Here we go now.
Oh, how times have changed. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that these same people were pretty much in agreement with President Trump. Take a look at this.
I voted numerous times when I was a senator to spend money to build a barrier to try to prevent illegal immigrants from coming in. And I do think you have to control your borders.
People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally. The American people will never accept immigration reform unless they truly believe that their government is committed to ending future illegal immigration.
Those who enter our country legally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law. And because we live in an age where terrorists are challenging our borders, we cannot allow people to pour into the U.S. undetected, undocumented, and unchecked.
Joining us now is author of Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, Victory or Death, Fox News contributor, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, former congressman. Fox News contributor Tammy Bruce joins us, and attorney Danielle McLaughlin. Good to have you all. Congressman, let me begin with you. 5 years ago, the entire Democratic Senate caucus voted for a barrier. Back in 2006, they voted for the Secure Fence Act that included Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Chuck Schumer, the whole gang. Now all of a sudden they're against it. That's only because Trump is for it, right?
Well, without a doubt, when you hear Senator Schumer saying President Trump is not going to get his wall, this is not about President Trump or his personality. This is about the constitutional duty and responsibility of the United States elected officials there in the House and the Senate. And that constitutional responsibility is to protect the sovereignty of the United States of America and make sure that the American citizens are secure. Article 4, Section 4 talks about this. The Founding Fathers put it in there. Now, when you talk about a border security wall, no one is talking about 1,700 miles of a continuous wall.
Of course not.
But we're talking about a place where you can have an obstacle, an obstruction, along some of these routinely used infiltration corridors that the drug cartels and others are using, to include Islamic jihadists to come into the United States of America.
But, Tammy, it's all about Trump. They just, you know, he could say Christmas presents for all, and the Democrats would oppose it because it's Donald Trump.
Well, yes, but in this particular instance, it's worth opposing because he'll actually get it done. We have Congress voting for these kinds of things all the time, and it never happens. It was promised to President Reagan. They thought they were going to have a wall and a serious border security back, of course, in the 80s and even prior to that. And this is a president who actually can't be controlled in that he can't be stopped from getting things done. And this is, I think, his primary threat. What we do know, of course, is that what we've seen in the last 2 years is the Democrats became a party of bullies, chasing around the GOP women, harassing people in public. And now we're seeing this happen, this kind of approach, as I think you're going to be seeing in office as well. We saw it with Representative Gutierrez attacking Secretary Nielsen for 6 minutes at a hearing.
And then he walked out.
And then when she's about to respond, he walks out.
Right.
So look, this is what the American people, I want them to see it for the next 2 years, but we also know that this can't be a game. It's been a game for too long for Washington. This is, I think, in some ways, what the founders wanted, a man of action or a person of action in the White House to move Congress into getting things done.
Right.
And at this point, I think the Congress should remember what their job is, why the president was elected, and that Harvard-Harris poll saying 80% of Americans want a secure border. And, of course, a barrier is going to have to be a part of it.
You know, Danielle, I think most Americans, frankly, they care about the wall. Many do. But I don't think they care if the government shuts down because it doesn't affect them. There have been 18 government shutdowns since 1976. TSA continues on, the post office, your Social Security checks, Medicare, Medicaid, all unaffected. You know, you're still going to get frisked at the airport, and the VA, you know, hospital isn't going to pull the plug. So it doesn't affect most Americans when the government shuts down at midnight tonight.
No, it doesn't. It does affect about 800,000 federal employees who are either going to be furloughed or are not going to be able to
pay for
the work.
Yeah, but they're non-essential employees,
no,
which invites
exactly
the question, why does the government employ non-essential workers?
Well, one example is the Department of Justice. You keep the criminal folks on and you take the civil people off. But I would still argue that enforcing our civil laws and making sure that penalties are paid is still an important function of government.
Right.
At the same time, most Americans, of course, if not all of them, won't notice that it's shut down. But what strikes me is this obsession by the government about itself. That is the scariest thing for them, that people will have a few days off during the holiday. They will still get paid a few days late. It's not like they won't get paid, because Americans know what it's like to be furloughed for years and to never get a paycheck because of what Washington, D.C. has done with policies, what the Obama administration did to the economy of this country. But when it comes down to this, it's like the scary monster of a government shutdown. It really isn't scary at all. As a matter of fact, also the markets respond well when the government shuts down.
Congressman, what about that? I mean, I think that but for the hair on fire media hysteria, you know, the earth will stop spinning on its axis if the government shuts down at midnight, most Americans would yawn.
Well, there really, as you said, Greg, there really is no effect on the everyday average American. As a matter of fact, you brought up an incredible point. Why does the federal government hire people that it has in non-essential positions? So this, and of course, when this quote-unquote shutdown is over, they will be given the back pay. So this is a very important thing to look at the effectiveness and the efficiency of the federal government. Right. I think another thing that is very disingenuous is that here you have people talking about Medicare for All, which has a $32 trillion price tag, but yet in a $4.4 trillion budget, we can't find $5.7 billion to ensure that we have security along our southern border.
Yeah.
To me, that's truly disingenuous.
Yeah, I mean, it really is absurd when you think of it. In the competitive marketplace, no small business or corporation, Danielle, would hire somebody who is not essential. They hire only vital workers because their goal is to increase profits. And yet the government, the most inefficient disorganization in the world, hires a load of non-essential workers.
Well, I mean, you're not suggesting that the civil division of the Department of Justice is non-essential.
I'm not a fan of the Department of Justice, so I would disassemble Department of Justice.
I think that there are many important things that the DOJ does from a civil perspective, not least of which is consumer protection, making sure that student loans people don't get ripped off. There's all sorts of things that we have lawyers and other people doing really important things for the American people.
Yes,
I don't think 800,000 people are
non-essential. They seize assets and levy penalties is one of the things they do. Why not use the $14 billion they seized from El Chapo, the Mexican drug cartel kingpin, and use just a portion of that to pay for the war?
Well, just as remember when we think about money and who we're hiring and what we're paying for, remember the billions that were lost in the State Department when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. The $700 billion in the Pentagon that can't be found.
Right.
The amount of money, because the government is so large, it becomes like water.
Right.
And you just lose it.
$200 toilet seats. You know, that's really, I mean, like, who has a
So why are we spending $5 billion on a wall when we could do this with drones, we could do this with personnel, actually create employment on the southern border with new technology? Democrats are not about open borders. They care about sovereignty. They care about using money wisely. So if we're concerned about 800,000 people and whether that's government waste or not, then why aren't we thinking that whether this is really actually a big white elephant that's going to get mired in lawsuits over eminent domain for years, cost the money, the government far more money as it relates
to
lawsuits.
But Danielle, we do know where, the, where there is walls. We do already have sections of walls across the border. Since the 90s,
yes.
And where those walls exist, at least 95% of illegal traffic ended. And
right.
That includes illegal aliens and drug traffic. So we have the proof in the history along our own border where the segments of walls exist, and again, starting in the 90s. So it's been consistent historically over the decades.
Congressman West, let me come back full circle to my original question. Democrats have long argued for a barrier on the southern border. And yet now they're flip-flopping. Would you agree that the only reason is they don't want to give Donald Trump a political victory because he promised the wall?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is not about President Trump, although Senator Schumer says that. Ask the Israelis who built the wall, what did that do for stemming terrorism when they had those first and second intifadas? When you look at proven, as Tammy has talked about, there are direct results from having a border obstacle down there along our southern border. And I know that Danielle talked about drones and other things. You can use the drones. You can use people on the ground. But the purpose of a wall is to canalize or channel people into areas where you do have those additional resources. We just found out this past week that we had an infiltration tunnel that was being built and almost completed along our southern border. We have a very serious problem, and we have to rectify.
All right. Congressman West, always great to see you. Tammy, Danielle,
Merry Christmas.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Christmas.
Happy
holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Quite a discussion and very, very insightful. But here's where I think most people in discussing the wall and the, you could say the controversy, about surrounding the wall, is that when and I watched many of Trump's, campaign speeches. The wall began to be a symbol of getting back to enforcing our borders, and especially our southern border between the United States and Mexico. So the wall itself wasn't always envisioned, in my opinion, to be a total physical structure all the way through from, down in Texas there in northeast Mexico all the way over to San Diego and over to the Pacific. In places, it's mountainous and so forth, and it's not very practical to even build a physical wall. Nor is it beneficial because there's wide open areas where people could sneak across. But anyway, the wall represents getting back to legitimate, common sense, immigration law and stopping this illegal immigration into the country. So whether you have a physical wall in certain sections where there's the main entry points and surrounding those, that makes sense. And there are certain key areas along the border where a wall would benefit. Otherwise, you're going to see a more of a electronic fence of detection devices and a combination of drones and airplanes that can be beneficial in enforcing immigration and for deporting those that are illegal immigrants and so forth. So when they say wall, I don't think that they're really describing and portraying this like they should, see. And if they did, I think it would make more sense to the American public, see. The public saying wall, they're looking at one big structure and they're not sure about, how that impacts and everything else. So I believe if they come back and they start portraying it in a clearer way, I think their argument would go a lot further with not only, the supporters of Trump, but also with the middle voter in there, the voters that are the quiet, the silent majority that waver back and forth, and there's a lot of independence and so forth. And I think with those particular people, I think you would be able to convince some of these people about reordering, resetting our immigration policy and making it work in the future. What's coming up next is Greg Jarrett's conversation about Comey, James Comey, and how he has been just leading the public and so forth time and time again. But there's a good panel discussion on this. So listen carefully, and here we go with Comey and the deep state.
Welcome back to this special edition of Hannity. I'm Greg Jarrett, filling in for Sean. Trump versus the swamp. With all the news this week on the Trump administration, Newsbusters pointed out the mainstream media had only one rather ridiculous conclusion, all in unison now. The walls are closing in on President Trump. Take a look at this collection we compiled.
With every organization he's ever run, as the Washington Post said, seemingly under investigation now, this is a president who really does feel the walls closing in on him very quickly.
While Donald Trump is no stranger to legal troubles, the walls may be closing in now.
So many investigations, and clearly the investigative walls are closing in on Trump.
The walls are closing in. It seems every day now a new facet of President Trump's life, both personal and public, is being scrutinized.
You know, it's like an echo chamber. They only hear themselves. Joining us now with reaction from the Hill, Joe Concha, Turning Point USA founder, Charlie Kirk, Fox News contributor, former Clinton pollster, Doug Schoen. So, Joe, let me start with you. You know, you've pointed out that Trump's ratings are fairly static. Does that mean that the media has lost its mojo, or Americans are just wise to their act?
Well, that's quite a montage you just played, Greg. I mean, it's as if a memo went out and everybody got the same exact talking point. Yeah, look, it's like the boy who cried wolf, right, the old saying, except now it's the boys and girls who cry Trump. And it's not just the walls are closing in. And by the way, you talk about impact. Yeah, his poll numbers are stubbornly in the 40s, and that tells you that all this negative coverage isn't really having any effect because nobody trusts the messenger and the messenger has become redundant. But it's not just the walls are closing in. It's the noose is tightening. And then we hear about all the moments, the pivotal moment, the dangerous moment, the defining moment. Then we hear about the beginning of the end, the bombshell revelation, the bombshell report, constitutional crisis, worse than Watergate. This is a turning point in the Trump presidency. Trump weaponizes, and then what I'm giving up for as my New Year's resolution at the end of the day. The point is, you keep saying these things over and over again,
right,
and it gets a bit tedious after a while, Greg.
It really does. You know, Doug, I spent a chapter in my book going through the outrageous media statements in which they said, this is a bombshell, this is the end of Trump, they're going to be taking him away in handcuffs any minute now. And, of course, most of those stories had to be retracted and corrected. They were wrong. They have written his political obituary as far back as 2 years ago, and it hasn't happened yet.
Well, look, you're absolutely right. The media has gone over the top. But I would say the narrative of this week, which is a problem for him, Greg, is not that the walls are coming in, but the walls not getting built. And with a Democratic House coming in, I'll say this to the president and any of his supporters listening. You have to do what Bill Clinton did when he had a Republican Congress.
Right.
Compromise. The president cannot govern only to build the wall and get his agenda. Compromise requires conciliation, compromise. And if he doesn't seek consensus, he'll be the loser.
But that was 1994, and you're the guy who told him to compromise.
But the political arithmetic is the same. And I remind Joe Concha, 46 is less than 50.
All right.
You need 50.
Chuck, Charlie, let me go to you because, you know, the imminent demise of Donald Trump has been written now for 2 years, as I pointed out before, and yet it hasn't happened. Is it simply because the media has such unabashed scorn and visceral hatred for Donald Trump, the man and his politics, that they cannot contain themselves?
That's exactly right. And I want to address the reference back to Bill Clinton. We must remember that Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, they fought, you know, endlessly. And actually, there was a government shutdown over Christmas during one of those negotiations. And on the front page of a magazine. It was the newt that stole Christmas. Never forget that Republicans fought in the 90s to get these reforms to balance the budget, welfare reform, so on and so forth. And Donald Trump right now is doing the correct thing, taking a hard line to fulfill a campaign promise that will make our country stronger and safer and protect our national sovereignty. And finally, Republicans are like, oh, wait, we can fight again. We don't have to just pass these endless continuing resolutions without progress to go back to the American people. This is a core campaign promise, and I'm so glad to see the president fulfilling it the best that he can and pressing the legislative branch to fulfill
that. When he actually does compromise and achieve something, and he did, you know, most recently the Criminal Justice Reform Act that was passed into law once he signs it, it's sort of buried in most newspapers. The New York Times actually gave it fairly minor play and grudgingly said, okay, he actually did something good. I know it broke their heart to have to print that.
Well, it steps on the narrative, Greg, right, that if we've been hearing about, and we're now 700 days into the presidency, if we've been hearing about that this president is a racist, then how could he possibly work with Senate Democrats, House Democrats? Everybody came together to put forth a criminal justice reform bill. I mean, that's one of the least racist things you could do because it will help out primarily minorities. So, yeah, that primarily got buried this week, certainly. But again, we go back to all these sayings being said over and over again and the impact that it has. And the bottom line is that all these pundits, and a lot of them are anchors, too. They're at least disguised as anchors, but they're giving opinions. They're sharing their feelings. They're not just seeking facts. The goal isn't to win an Emmy or to get a Pulitzer. The goal is to get on Stephen Colbert's show or Jimmy Kimmel's or Bill Maher, because that's when they feel like they've arrived. And one last point to Doug, by the way. I know you said you got to get to 50. The president won with 46.1% of the vote, and he still won the presidency. So maybe you don't have to get to 50.
A rejoinder?
Yeah, but the rejoinder is to govern with less than a majority, to govern with a narrow constituency is a recipe for failure. Sure, Joe, sometimes you can draw it to an inside straight, but that's not how I would advise a president who's got to represent all the people and wants to represent everyone in a way of producing consensus and conciliation should govern, especially when the Democrats control the House.
Do you think, Charlie, that, you know, most Americans, when they tune in and tune out because they hear the same thing, the echo chamber that we played, all of them saying that, you know, 50 times on MSNBC and CNN saying the wall is closing in, they were just parroting a Democratic talking point. Do you think Americans are just wise to that?
Well, without a doubt. And look, the only reference to the wall that really should be talked about is that Donald Trump's going to do everything he can to actually build the wall. But again, it's just so funny to see them parroting the same thing over and over again. If you want evidence of collusion, that's collusion. You know, the media, they're obviously they're getting some memo or something in the morning. I mean, they're all getting on the same page about. But to the previous point that I really want to mention is that, you know, you can't govern or you don't have a mandate to govern unless you have 50% or more approval ratings. First of all, I never heard that when Obama was president. Secondly, these approval ratings, I mean, look, we have become such a bifurcated country where you have Manhattan and Malibu and then middle America. It's essentially those are the two buckets. And the approval rating for Donald Trump in middle America is still very, very strong. And you saw that with the strong Senate performances in states like Missouri, Indiana, and North Dakota.
West, Charlie, they weren't so good.
There were some pickups. There were some losses.
A lot of losses.
We gained in the Senate, and Trump did a lot better than people thought. There was no blue wave whatsoever, despite being outspent, and despite all the pundits saying this is going to be the best election ever, and he outperformed Obama in his first midterm. Donald Trump's going to get convincingly reelected. I reject the premise that he somehow doesn't have a mandate to govern because people in Manhattan and Malibu don't like him.
He is vitiating his mandate by not seeking consensus.
The guy from Harvard had to get in the last word. They teach you that at Harvard, by the way.
They do, and I'm happy and proud of that. Thank you.
Yeah,
Greg.
Well, your basketball team ain't so great.
That is sadly true.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. Doug, Sean, Charlie, Kirk. Coming up, the Mueller witch hunt could be wrapping up very soon. We'll have analysis coming up next. Welcome back to this special edition of Hannity, Trump versus the Swamp. Former FBI Director James Comey is continuing to downplay deep state corruption and the efforts to undermine President Trump, telling House lawmakers this week, quote, who cares? when asked about the source of the phony Trump dossier that was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton and her campaign. Also developing tonight, we're learning that any government shutdown will not affect, of course, Robert Mueller's probes operations, and that the special counsel might actually wrap up the investigation as soon as mid-February. Yeah, we've heard that before. Joining me now for a reaction is author of the terrific book, License to Lie, former federal prosecutor Sidney Powell, along with Trump Campaign Advisory Board member and attorney Madison Jesiato. Good to have you both. So, Sidney,
good to be with you.
I have, in fact, a copy of the 173 pages of Comey's testimony on Monday, and I nearly fell out of my chair when I saw him say, what difference does it make? It was like the Hillary Clinton thing. What difference is it? Who cares that Hillary Clinton paid for it? And it was composed by a guy who admitted he'd do anything to stop Trump, meaning he'd lie, which is what the dossier was.
Yeah, that's a familiar line, isn't it, Greg? It has quite the ring to it since Mrs. Clinton herself used it. Unbelievable. Of course, the leaking, lying Comey only cares about James Comey and whatever narrative it is he wants to promote, including his primary job of covering up for Mrs. Clinton. So he's going to say whatever it is that promotes his own agenda and her cover-up. Absolutely appalling.
And Madison, that's not only appalling, but he lied to the FISA court using exclusively the dossier, which he admits he hadn't verified. He deceived the FISA judges by concealing the fact that it was paid for by Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. I'm willing to bet that the FISA judges would have wanted to know that vital tidbit of information that Comey concealed.
You know, it's disingenuous and lazy at the very least, going back to Comey saying that the motivations or the origination of the dossier doesn't matter and that it wasn't worthy of more investigation. Of course, he knows better than that. We know better than that. And when we look at this dossier being used to obtain court permission to spy on an American citizen, it's absolutely appalling. He's an embarrassment to the FBI. He's an embarrassment to the American people. And quite frankly, people are sick of him. He loves to listen to himself talk. He's out for himself and only himself. He didn't do a good job at the FBI, and he's doing a terrible job right now, and I don't think he's very credible or trustworthy in the hearing.
So, you know, Sidney, Comey's the guy who launched the Trump-Russia investigation without any evidence and spied on the Trump campaign by deceiving the court. So on Monday, he says, and he said this in his previous testimony, he can't recall who drafted the document that launched the investigation, never knew that Clinton paid for it. How could he not know? Bruce Orr's role? Gee, I don't know anything about that. Christopher Steele? I don't know anything about his involvement. The guy who wrote the dossier that Comey used. He is either the most clueless and incompetent FBI director in modern history, or he's lying. Which do you think?
I think it's actually both, Greg. He made material false statements to the FISA court when he signed that affidavit saying it was a verified application to the FISA court when he didn't do anything to verify any of it. Why he has not yet been prosecuted, I don't know, other than the entire Department of Justice and FBI are corrupt. I mean, somebody needs to be opening a grand jury investigation into Mr. Comey and all the FISA abuses right now.
And
it's got to be done.
Madison, he still is dodgy about whether or not among the seven government documents he stole and leaked for the purpose of triggering his longtime friend Robert Mueller as the special counsel, he's still not really giving genuine straight answers as to whether any among those seven documents was classified and therefore leaking illegally classified information. It's really pretty astonishing.
Exactly. He claims to care about truth. He claims to want to share this truth with the American people. He's a leaker. He's a liar. And when we look at the FISA court abuse, this isn't something that just started with him. If we look back all the way to the early 2000s, there was, I think, over 70 FISA court judges that said they were misled by the FBI. This is an issue that has been needed to be addressed for almost two decades now. And this is just a prime example of why.
This is not an easy thing to confront. The corruption appears to be so deep and in so many levels, from top to bottom in Washington, that it's very, very difficult because they don't want to prosecute and investigate themselves. So they're doing everything they can to delay this and delay that and not provide, you know, evidence or, you could say any evidence or any paperwork or documents. They're being forced. You know, Judicial Watch has done a really good job in forcing out of the federal government certain paperwork and documents that they wouldn't have provided without lawsuits. And that's what Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton and his crew over there at Judicial Watch, has been able to force virtually through lawsuit against the federal government certain documents and emails and recordings and things like this that have been very beneficial to try to, you know, reveal and expose what's been going on in Washington. And what's been going on up there has been really horrendously evil and corrupt. And it's all about the big money. They are thieving our treasury, these different people. So that's what we're up against now. And we've got to try to support these investigations, those that can be carried on by the Senate committees, are a saving's grace. We're going to see a flip-flop occur on the House side of those committees, and they're not going to help at all because they're investigating themselves and they won't do that, see. So we're going to see an erosion there. Now, there have been other things throughout the country in Gatwick, okay, UK, United Kingdom airport over there. They had an attack by drones. There was a man and woman. They flew drones over the runways and so forth about 50 different times. The military finally came in and set up some equipment, okay, and were able to stop some of that electronically and so forth. And they did make a couple of arrests. But we're beginning to see how dangerous a drone can be. Many of the jet engines today, most are designed to withstand a bird. If a bird flew in and got caught up into the engine, the rotors in there could probably cut a normal bird up. But if you're talking about a drone that's got some pretty substantial structure to it and some metal parts to it and things like that, it could really tear up a jet engine and knock out an engine. And that's really the danger that they were up against there at Gatwick, is that these drones were flying around so many times and they were trying to take off and they couldn't really take off, and so they impeded the whole airport operation. And I believe that there were hundreds of people that were virtually stranded there over about a 36-hour period. And the British finally came in and put some devices in there where they could stop, you know, what was going on. And, you know, but we've got this, okay, the latest news is in Congress is that we've got this shutdown occurring before Christmas. And some of the last information that I've received, here's an update about an AP update about an hour ago. It says the partial federal shutdown was expected to drag into Christmas as President Donald Trump and congressional leaders remain stuck in standoff over his border wall with Mexico and no breakthrough Saturday. Okay. It says Vice President Mike Pence arrived on Capitol Hill with a counteroffer to Democrats after two sides traded offers in recent days at the White House. And Trump heard mixed messages during a lunch with conservative lawmakers. Some wanted him to fight for the walls. Others preferred to reopen the government. Right now, we've got about 25%, according to different news releases, that are open, that are actually closed down. About 25% of our government, federal government, is closed down right now. But they will get their own furlough and so forth. They will get back pay when they go back to work. They're not going to be cheated out of anything. So we're just trying to get this wall money, see, for Trump. Now, on an earlier a budget. He got about $1.6 billion, but he's asking over $5 billion in this particular bill now. Now, what happened was the other day, the bill started in the House and was approved by a miracle, really. They flew people in and people came back. What had happened was that a continuing resolution was thought to be having been agreed on by Trump, and he changed his mind and woke up on Friday morning with a different mindset and said, hell no, he wanted his money for the wall, see? So that got, that had to, you know what I mean, reset everything, see what I mean? And it just was, it got very hectic over the negotiations, because it took everyone off of, you know, off balance, and people weren't sure then exactly what Trump was trying to do until they find out what he's going to. I think Rush Limbaugh had played a part in the role in this, and the other talk radio shows throughout the country, I believe Alex Jones was instrumental, and many others across the country in bringing about Trump's, you know what I mean, hard-headedness and saying, look, we're gonna just stop, you know, government then, close down the government. I want the money for the wall. I promised my voters, my supporters, that I'd build a wall, and I'm gonna do it. So that's basically what he came up with. Getting back to this Gatwick thing, we have, there were devices, the drone detection devices were used, okay. They used a drone tracker, okay. They used drone jamming devices, okay. And it said on 9 p.m. Wednesday, December 19th, the flights were suspended, okay. And then the runways reopened on Thursday, okay. It was safe enough to reopen the runway, see. So they had quite a, you know, quite a conflict with those people. And that's what small little devices then can do, like these drones. See, I don't know how big they were or anything else. And, you know, oh, getting back to also on this Syria, let me make a few notes here, comments on Syria. If you remember, John McCain went over there and met with several of those generals. I mean, and on the ground, those rebel leaders, I should say. And one of those was the ISIS. There's a photograph of the ISIS leader Baghdadi in the background behind him. So he was in contact with some of the top leadership that would become the leaderships, if not right then, of the ISIS forces, the very ones that they're saying now that are going to come back into, you know, Syria. I think they have pretty well been reduced to a very, very small area over there now, and they're totally, they've been reduced to nothing and liquidated. But what some of the arguments are is that the Kurds, who have always been enemies of the Turks, then will have the Turks turn on them. And we've actually used the Kurds to do some of our fighting, and we've been supplying them weapons and so forth. And so that has been one of the key argument, you know, on the idea not to pull out. I think Trump's doing the right thing. We need to start pulling out of Afghanistan too. We just got too many people all over this world, and we're spending, we're broke. The country's broke. We just can't afford to spend all this money. And we're spending money in Congress right now by the billions. And of course now they're saying on some of these MSNBC and so forth that Trump's over now. His now that he can't get this money through Congress and the wall, he's over with, and his whole administration is duck soup. He's not going to last any longer and so forth. But Trump is a fighter. I think he gets in his own way sometimes because of his ego, and I've always said that for a while. And I think there is a real danger with the House being controlled by the Democrats to where they could bring impeachment charges against him. And then there would have to be a court, you know, conducted. and set up in the Senate, and then they would, you know, have all these evidences coming in there, whatever, you know, against Trump, and it could be a big mess. In the meantime, he has a lever, though, in the Department of Justice with all the wrongdoing that Hillary and all these other people have done. So we're going to see, I believe, a possible Mexican standoff occur between the two parties, and I don't know exactly, I can't really predict accurately what might come out of that, see. And I just don't know where we're headed there, you know. We have the Chinese now that are getting very, very aggressive with their money and so forth. And we're going to be in conflict with them from now on. And Dr. Wei-Jing Zhang, who I've interviewed in the past, is one of the most stand-up people fighting that red regime, that Shikong regime. And what you have in China even today is you have the Communist Party and some of the elites, cream de la cream elite families in China, along with the top military, of which they're involved with those families or out of those same families. And that, so you have an oligarchy of military communists, and they've enriched themselves through the plundering of the country over there and so forth. So, or the monopoly, I should say, of capital. Minimal. It's hard to say if they've stolen anything, but since they had availability of capital, I'm sure that they've provided credits to themselves to buy and to control a lot of the infrastructure and the companies over there to start with. So that's for sure. I mean, that's sort of a given, you know. And so that's really the people ruling China today. And also they've had a big investments in our media and so forth, Hollywood and so forth. They've come in, and also they've been stealing a lot of our technology and sending it back to China and to the government. So we are in a heck of a mess, and we've got to start waking up to this Chinese problem, and really a big, big danger, or we're going to get defeated here. I mean, and as much as I, you know, love the Democrats, Republicans, and the country as a whole, the Democrats are continuing to bring us a collective state. See, they've been totally taken over by the collective, socialist collective idea that government can provide anything and everything to us. While on the right still, you know, it says, well, we've got Social Security and all that, but the right is more entrepreneurial oriented in saying, look, we can create, you know what I mean, companies. And we can create a lot of, you know, web-based companies to do things. And to create new devices with these 3D type printing devices and so forth. Now, that has a great potential in the future. So we've got to keep that in mind. But as far as trying to look at the system in Washington is what we're focused in on now because of these problems with immigration and so forth and budget right now, is that you've had a tremendous system that has been programmed, I guess. So if you take decades ago, you had programming that got into our school system, and it got into our West Points and Annapolis and so forth. And that programming benefits the big interest, the country started worshiping mammon, money, see? And it started focusing then, many of the universities and so forth that were dominated, corporate dominated stuff, they started giving out grants and stuff. And if you didn't write a book on favoring their overall view of the system, then you couldn't get grants. Or if you didn't, you know, speak the right kind of politics and so forth, then you didn't get any money, see? And that's how this whole thing has been sort of evolved into, is sort of a system of mammon and a big mountain of mammon, mammonism you could call it, versus, you know, belief in God or humbling oneself to believe in a higher power, see. And in this mammon worship, then, you know, it's all money and your bottom line and what's your net worth and so forth. What's your financial statement say? And it's destructive. It's been very destructive. And that's where some of the people on the left are saying, look, capitalism is wrong and we need to do something different like this socialism, communism that they're professing. But the problem with capitalism in our system is the monopoly, crony and Babylonian form of capitalism. And being that, then it's been monopolistic overall. So the money and the credit available has been only provided predominantly to the insiders. And the insiders then provide more and more money to the insiders. But at the very top of this power pyramid, we have a psychopathic type of individuals, see. Because of the money and so forth and the godliness, they are gods and they have created a system of rule, see. And they've been using all the scientific methods that they can get their hands on because they control a lot of the corporate entities that make up the business, big business. And so they meet here at Davos, over in Davos, Switzerland, every year at the World Economic Forum. They're emissaries and representatives, and the principals show up at the Bilderberg Group meetings that are held annually. That's another upper level, top level people that start making laws and you could say policies and you could say and how they're going to treat the rest of the world, say. So we have a heck of a system that has been spawned and has grown and been nurtured, cultivated, conditioned, programmed. And that whole system has been programmed all the way from the top to the bottom. But it's based on money. And since it's based on money, then people worship money. And in their worship of money, then they turn their back on God. And when you turn your back on God, you've got problems. Now, you know, there's all this teachings that are going on for decades in our universities. Yeah, secular humanism. That's what they've been teaching. They've been teaching that man is the answer, not God. And in this man-centered worldview, they point out all these great people. And now even that is in this disarray and in disfavor. So even now they're taking what they used to teach as these great ideas of Plato and Aristotle and so forth. Now they're saying that is that's been creating a man-based, dominated over the women. So it's created a anti-feminist type of system. So that what they're doing now is they're saying we're rebelling totally against all these great thinkers that brought us much of what we call Western civilization. Now, in coordination with that, you could say, in that assault on the West, you've had people like Gramsci, Italian communist Gramsci coming out of Italy, Antonio Gramsci. And he's saying, look, the way to take communism and make it supreme in the Western world is to destroy the culture. And so that's really what's been going on to a large extent through one mechanism, reductionism of the language. And a reinterpretation of our Constitution into something like it's a breathing, living document that should change to the whims and stuff of what groups and cults. That's basically what has been evolving, is that we've had an attack on multiple levels of our culture, political, and religious, and so forth, educational, and it has resulted in a very destructive mechanism. And that destructive mechanism has resulted in broken families. See, we've had all this thinking, some of this feminist thinking, it resulted in a tremendous breakup of families. And those breakup of families has resulted in children that are really, really lost out there. And they're disheartened and they're sad. and they're into drug addiction. That's why we have our breakup of families and our cultural debasement, you could say, that has occurred, has created a tremendous market for drugs coming in from Mexico and from Colombia originally, earlier. And so we've got a big drug problem because we have a lot of people that are not happy and that are they're unstable in this country. And so they go out and grab drugs for a temporary high or something to feel good, a little feel-goody type thing. Now this smoking grass, we should have not decriminalized that years ago, but it is still, it's an addictive substance, and it can cause problems in driving. See, so and also the problem with pot is that it is, it's on the sedative side and it's a downer, you know. So you may not feel like fighting or anything, but heavy use of that, I think, has resulted in many people losing their drive to get up and do something, see? So it has been on, it's been on the sedative side, sedative side, I should say. And, that really, would bring, forth, just a lot of people that are just not doing anything. And also the job market has not been good, and there's been these fast food jobs, but that's all sometimes. And Trump, surprisingly enough, is bringing back this economy. Now, what's dangerous is that you have people that are in control of the Fed and so forth, and by raising interest rate, you can kill off this expansionist that Trump has going on. And some of the conspiratorial people are saying, look, they're destroying the economy for him. And there's even stuff, you could hear reports saying the recession, there's going to be a recession. Just because the stock market is coming off, there's going to be a recession. Well, that's not necessarily all tied together, see. But, I mean, it's just like when we had this so-called financial problem. They were saying that the economy would collapse back then. But actually what was going to collapse was financial institutions that the cream de la cream, the biggest people, richest people in the world, owned. And they would have lost their financial equities, which were into the billions. So they got the Fed to start crediting them and funding them with quantitative easing by the billions, and save those institutions, those same institutions that are owned by people that are manipulating and using us through all kinds of mind wars techniques and so forth. We've got the same thing occurring possibly in England now, in the European Union or Eurozone. It looks like they may discontinue buying of bonds, which was their method of quantitative easing over there for their banks in Europe, see. And they're going to discontinue that. That means that Europe may be into some kind of a financial squeeze. But if it is, then they're setting those banks up for consolidation by even bigger banks. That's what usually happens. That's what happened on this financial problem we had, was that the big banks that were liquid, they just gobbled up all these small banks. These small banks are the competitors, the ones, the banks that they didn't want. They just let them go broke. Because why buy a bank with a bunch of bad assets, or, you know, doesn't have any net worth anyway, see? So some of those banks were just neglected, and they just forced them into bankruptcy. Yeah, bankruptcy, so forth. I want to thank everyone out there in our listening audience for listening tonight. And we certainly, you know, cherish each and every life out there. And we're on the life side, you know, but we're also, over the years, I've sort of progressed into a sort of a peace, on the peace side. I think we're fighting too many wars overseas, and I think I agree with Ron Paul and Rand Paul about that. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for listening tonight. And thesecrettruth.com, www.thesecrettruth.com. You can find there. We broadcast every Saturday night, 7 to 9. Thank you so very much for listening, and good night. Bye-bye.